Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be discussing a subject matter that you gals, I think, are going to be especially interested in. But hey, fellas, it pays to listen. You may learn something about the fairer sex that you did not know about, or maybe something you need to know about so that you can understand them better. Well, anyway, whichever way you want to turn it around, the book is The Alchemical Woman, and my guest today is Ramona Rubio. Ramona, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. Great to be here.
Now, you are a very interesting lady. You and Catherine Davidson put this book together. You are yourself a cultural mythologist.
That's
which
right.
I think is a fascinating title. I bet you people love to invite you to parties.
Well, and I'm definitely a storyteller.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is something that is very significant to you and has been. And then with Catherine, she is a licensed therapist who does depth psychology, energy psychology, and works with women that are going through different transitions in their lives. She's got quite a background. And both of you together have decided that you wanted to do something to empower women, to enable them to know that they have a wonderful place in life, and that as individuals, that they can really explore certain things that maybe culturally or environmentally or socially they didn't really feel comfortable in doing. And it's as if you're saying, open up to this, this is wonderful. How did you and Catherine come to know each other and get together to do this unique book?
Well, Donna, what happened was that she and I both started at the Pacifica Graduate Institute back in 1995, and we started together on the same day. We were interviewed on the same day, and we ended up being roommates. And there were a lot of other people present, but that's the way it worked. And from the very beginning, we started to talk about this idea of doing work together. And as you well know, that just is a beginning conversation that we don't know how it will eventually unfold. But we kept saying we'll work together, we'll do things together. And one of the classes that we took, I think it was in our second year of graduate school, was this whole introduction to alchemy. And it fascinated the socks off of me. I was so intrigued by the images and the language and the mystery of it all that I knew I was hooked on something that really wanted my attention. And it's interesting because Dr. Davidson had the same reaction, and we didn't have the same class. We were at different times. But when we met back in our room, I started to tell her about my feelings on this amazing introduction to this world, and she said, you know, I feel the same way. And we started a dialogue about it, and fast forward 8 years later, we got together and started to do really deep research on alchemy, and eventually this year, here came the Alchemical Woman.
Define alchemy.
Alchemy is an ancient tradition that our particular book, there's different countries that have alchemy in it. I have studied alchemy, but we did it from Western perspective that originated in Alexandria, Egypt. So that's just to kind of get a geographic on it. And the alchemists from Egypt really were interested in several things. The first thing was to change base metals or matter into gold. And the underlying process by which they were working on this was to change their basest selves, their lower selves, their latent selves, into their higher selves, if you will, more of the this wholeness within their being. So the way that they would be able to accomplish the outer manifestation of changing base metal into gold was to change themselves from their basis experiences into their golden selves. And that was this idea of alchemy and working with all the metals and the formulas and all kinds of astrology, astronomy. A tremendous infill of information was coming. They were the beginning point of chemistry that we now study here in the Western world.
I found it most interesting, and this is right in the very beginning of your book, that Maria Hebrea is a woman that you give a great deal of attention to, and you have a drawing of her that you have put together, but you have a story about this woman and that she ended up becoming a legend. And when you think about the history of the world for the past few thousand years and how it has been very much a patriarchal type of an environment where women were not, at least in the Western world and in many other parts of the world too, they were not encouraged at all, one, to read, to become educated. It was a fearful situation when a woman was educated. And then here is a woman that was very much involved in chemistry, very much involved in becoming a legend. And this is a fascinating perspective because alchemy, usually any picture I can recall ever being associated with, was always with men.
You're absolutely right, Donna. And I think that was one of the major pulls for me, is that when I started to do my research and came across this amazing woman, that I thought, oh my gosh, we have to anchor this work in her, in honor of her and all of what she did. And it's fascinating because what we also discovered is that even in today's laboratories and chemistry labs, that there is an instrument called the Bain-Marie that she actually put together, that it's her creation. She is the inventor of the Bain-Marie. And today, now we're talking about 200 A.D., so we're talking lots and lots and lots of centuries or decades and centuries ago that this woman invented this, and today in the laboratory that is still being used in one form or the other, the Bain-Marie.
I think it is so amazing that today we have access to information and to records that enable us to do this kind of historical research. We're discovering so many things that were forcibly hidden. Many times things were destroyed. The evolution of the woman today, I think, in part must, absolutely must, be associated with women that are learned, women who have been able to get the education and can then pass it along to the younger generations. Because if it isn't, and that's part of what your book does, The Alchemical Woman, if this is not done, then the fears, the ignorance, and the superstitions of what I call the few end up dominating again, and we go into this gross level of stupidity. And I think it's terrible. I just think we have, whether you're male or female, a brain doesn't care what body it's in. It's a brain. It's intelligence. It doesn't care what form it has. It just wishes to express itself. And I'll be so glad when we get to a point where we don't have to make it, gee, this way or that way or the other way. Just accept people for that which they have in talents and gifts and, you know, encourage them to develop them to their greatest capacity. But women still today battle. I know this for a fact because of my interaction with women. I know what I've gone through. They still battle with, if you're female, you are not supposed to be intelligent. You're supposed to sort of shuttle it down. Let's just keep a lower profile here. And that's a shame, because it shouldn't be that way. So I really liked the way that your book started off. Your book in no way is arrogant. your book in no way is derogatory towards the opposite sex. In no way is this material that a woman would read that would feel disempowered by it or develop what I call this false persona that just doesn't work in the real world.
That's correct, Donna. And I think our intention was to really create a practical guide for everyday soul work that nurtures, that informs, and that empowers not just women, but I like to say every woman and every woman's man. You're right. We are in this together. And the more that we nurture not only ourselves but each other through relationships and through the awareness of that we're all on this alchemical journey of transformation, that we then are able to dialogue in such a friendly and loving way that we collaborate together as a species and as a, you know, of the full gamut of the world to be able to nurture not just ourselves, each other, but the planet and everything else in it. So this is, and the alchemists were so aware of this. They were so keen and focused on the nature, the wholeness of nature, and working with it and not destroying it. And I think that's why alchemy is having such a resurgence now in our consciousness and even wanting more, especially in 2008.
I think that the word is developing a whole different connotation.
Yes.
Too often when people hear that word, they will say, oh, it's this, that, or the other, and it's almost like it's a medieval point of ignorance. But it basically was that process that was showing the change in people's thinking so that there would be examination, so that you would not just talk about purple butterflies and go woo-woo and that would be it. You were going to deal with the realities of life and with an understanding that through education, through being aware, through paying attention to your intuition, you were going to have a much richer life and were going to be more of a contributing human being. Now, one of the points that I looked at that I found very interesting was your use of color in explaining the various levels. Let's go into the color black for a moment.
Okay.
Because it's a fascinating pattern to utilize, and I really believe in color and its effect. I mean, you can look at nature and you know how it's going to work.
Uh-huh.
So give us a little bit of the background on that.
Well, specifically, the blackness, which the alchemists would call nigredo, that to them was a place of chaos. That was devoid of any light, of any movement, of any emotion. This is where the individual was beginning their work on themselves to be able to start to move outside of the problems that they were facing as human beings. And what we have looked at, and this is taking Dr. Carl Jung's work in depth psychology and looking at the overlay as a metaphor, and the alchemists did the same thing, is using this blackness as a metaphor that when we're stuck, when we are paralyzed from challenges such as death, loss, divorce, anything like that where the individual is just sapped of all their energy and they're just stuck in this place where there's no movement. And that's nigredo, that's that blackness stage that we all visit, and sometimes more than what we like to, but that is part of the human experience. And that's what the alchemists dealt with, and that's what we're dealing. As modern alchemists, all of us here that breathe and walk are experiencing as well.
You have a poem in your book called The Journey, and I'd like to read it. It's one day you finally knew what you had to do and began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice. Though the Howell House began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles, mend my life, each voice cried, but you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do, though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at its very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible. It was already late enough, and a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice which you slowly recognized as your own that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. That's by Mary Oliver. That was quite a powerful, powerful statement by her. How did you come to know Mary?
Well, my Dr. Davidson had studied with her and was very aware of this poem, and so she felt that this was so appropriate for pronouncing this journey of transformation, that we are, though we are collective and we collaborate with each other, that the journey really starts with us, that the only voice, the only one that we can save is ourselves, in order to expand and be much more receptive to what we call the golden woman within.
Let's go into one of your other colors that you have here, and it is yellowness. Talk about the yellowness and what level that is.
All right. In the field of alchemy, there are these, what we call these stages, and that's how these colors come up, and they work through them. But in the yellowness, which is the citrinitis, for citrine is that just that yummy honey color that is so inviting. And yellowness stands for the juiciness of life. This is where we're in the body, where we dance, we sing, we have sex, we have bowel movements, we have dirty diapers, we have life unfolding with us, we have aging, decomposition. That's what the stage of citrinitis is. And though it is so enticing and inviting, the dark side of citrinitis, because there's a dark side to every one of these colors and stages, is that we become obsessed with some type of either drug or sex, that we go overboard and we lose our boundaries. So there's always this indication of keeping balance in these stages as we grow and go through them.
There is a quote by an unknown individual that you put in here. Wisdom is knowing I am nothing. Love is knowing I'm everything. In between, I am moving. Now, that's a profound bit of wisdom.
That's right. And I think that that's where the journey of transformation is, Donna, in that movement, that in the stages of alchemy, it's dynamic and spiraling. It isn't step by step. It isn't I've got it now, and so I can move on, and I'll never experience that again. This is fluid. This is going to all these stages. At one day, we can experience all these stages, and in a lifetime, we'll experience these stages. So as we think we are have arrived in our wholeness, you know, that we have our purpose and we know what we're doing, only to find out that we've lost our job or our spouse is going to divorce us or some kind of, you know, thing that just throws us into the dark space again. So the good news is that we're always evolving and dynamically, beautifully through these stages. The bad news is that we're always evolving through all these stages. We never really arrive, because I think if we arrive, then we're no longer in this human experience.
I agree with that, and I think that's a very good point. So many times we reach particular levels in our lives, and with all the stuff that we're indoctrinated with, we seem to think, well, I guess this is it. You know, I've turned 50, and this is what's supposed to happen. Everything's going to go north. Maybe it's south. Anyway, it's supposed to go south. I think we'd like it to go north, but it doesn't. Anyway, it goes south in whatever direction it's going to go. And we go, oh, yeah, that's the way it's supposed to happen. It really is a shift, and you have to work at it. You have to be mindful of it to say, wait a minute. Just because somebody was stuck with that kind of an opinion or an attitude does not have to apply to me, period.
That's
and
right.
That's taking personal responsibility for where you want the self to be. And that is a big step forward, and it's a tough step forward because you may not fit in with those that you've kept company with when you come into that level of awareness. You may have to totally shift into a different environment of personal contact.
That's, yes, correct on that, Donna. And I think that, you know, what is so exciting is that this process of transformation, and I like to say it, is not for sissies. Brave-hearted women and men who really want to go on this adventure and face their true self in the mirror and say, this is who I am, and this is what I want to become, and I know that I can become, and proceed on this journey, they will be profoundly changed, alchemically changed forever.
And no question.
That I can guarantee.
Yes, I would concur. Absolutely concur on that point. You have a story about a woman, Maggie, and I thought her story was worth talking about because Maggie was going through some changes in her life, and she ended up having a crash. Can you address that story a little bit?
Yes, of course. And this is work that Dr. Davidson had done personally with these women, and they were very gracious to let us use their stories and how they worked through the dark times and also, you know, through the different stages that they were dealing with. But this particular one is Maggie is representing the stage of rubido, and that's that redness of life. And the redness is where we are very much in tune with what's working on the inside is also very much working on the outside of ourselves. So with Maggie, she had, as you said, different things happening in her life, lots of dark thoughts, and she wasn't really feeling strongly about what was happening to her. She felt that she'd had a tragedy that occurred. I mean, she had had an accident, and she just didn't feel that life was worth living. And as she started to look at who she was and became much more aware of her power, she started to make major changes in her life. And I think it's about awareness, that once she was aware, the fact that she'd lived half of her life, what she says here is that I'm not going to live forever, that half my life might be finished without ever finding out what I really want to do with it. I need to get a plan about life and not simply react to life. And I think that's the key right there that she got, is that she needed it to be active in her life. She needed to embrace it fully and not sit back and let it happen to her. And for your listeners, I say, I challenge them to do the same thing.
I think one of the important points that she had to work through was the awareness that people around her thought she had a perfect life.
Oh, yeah.
And they would make fun of her, would think, say she was stupid, she just didn't have, she wasn't using common sense, why in the world was she making these changes? But Maggie did it for Maggie. She didn't do it for anybody else. And she didn't go about causing tremendous disruption in other people's lives. She said, this is my life, and this is what I'm doing, which created ripples for others. And she landed on her feet, and she continues to work with her own individuality, not to the exclusion of other people, unless they're not interested in seeing the new Maggie.
And I think that was a key thing for her, is that, like she said, it wasn't that she was trying to be mean or to criticize anyone else. She just was working on herself, and she realized that the only way she could move outside of what had held her captive was to say yes to herself, to know that what was inside of her needed to be expressed on the outside, and so that when people asked her for a truth, for her truth, she was able to say it and not couch it in some kind of a mask that really didn't represent who she was in the inside. And that's the hardest thing, I think, Donna, for us to do, is to really say what's in our heart when we think we might hurt somebody because it's not what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
Yeah.
And it is, it's a very, very difficult process. Words are very powerful. And someone that is aware is going to be very conscientious about how they express themselves. But clarity is important. I really liked what you had written here. You say, step out with confidence firmly, rooted in the knowledge that who you are and what you want requires no one's permission. Say yes to you. Say yes to your voice. Say yes to your soul story. I think that, Ramona, that is just absolutely wonderful. And I'd like to ask if you have a website.
Well, yes, we do. It's thealchemicalwoman.com.
And that's alchemicalwoman.com. Do you have a closing thought for those that are listening today?
Well, I always like to close with the poem that I wrote. It's at the back of the book because it's an invitation. And it says, go forward unafraid, eager to know deeply the golden woman within that beckons to be heard and understood.
My guest today has been Ramona P. Rubio. She is, along with her associate, Catherine W. Davidson, very dedicated to empowering the female to understanding what she can discover about herself, her life, and to empower that positioning, The Alchemical Woman, a handbook for everyday soul work. This is someone that I think anyone would be interested in reading, and I do think even the guys would benefit from reading this, because believe it or not, there's a lot of parallels between the males and the females, and when we can have understanding on one side and it can go to the other side as well, we all win in the long term. Ramona, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much, Donna.
You are more than welcome. This is Donna Sebo, and don't forget, go to the alchemicalwoman.com website, and you will find information on the book. That's thealchemicalwoman.com, and you'll have all kinds of details you can go through there. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break for just a moment, and then we'll be back with a lot of good stuff to share. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-T-A-P TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-07.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open. If you would like to let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I'd be delighted to do exactly that. Here are the telephone numbers to call in, and you can also express an opinion on subject matter if you so desire. Always interested in chatting with you. Here are the telephone numbers to call into, toll-free, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And remember, all I need is your first name or your initial. Of course, I love to know where you're calling in from. And then if you're a Canadian, it's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And also we have the number 530-876-3222. So we've got three phone lines and you can call in. I just got some material put on my desk and I'll be sharing it with you sometime in the near future about how they now have devised tests on your DNA. And perhaps you've heard me talking about the awareness that I've had for well over 20 years that this is going to evolve in the medical environment, that they were going to be able to tell you things about your body physiology so that you would know how to work with your body so it would be great and it would be healthy and you could be attentive to your wellness. Well, I just got some information about a young lady who did exactly that, and it's really fascinating. So I don't have all of the material reviewed at this time, but I am going to be bringing it up. But I thought, since we've had a little bit of conversation about being green and conserving energy, that comes up every once in a while, because it's really a big issue in our lives. It's something that we are becoming more and more cognizant of. What can we do? What kind of energy can we utilize that enables us to be more efficient, less harmful to the environment, and also it's going to save money where we don't have to have outrageous costs and where just about anywhere in the world it can be utilized? Well, of course, weather is different everywhere. Environments, obviously, because of that, are going to be different. So we have to have an adaptability. We have to be able to utilize more than one form of energy, whether it's the sun or the wind or water or whatever. I mean, it's just, we just need to know how to do it. So because we are exploring and because we have found certain aspects of technology have worked for us, such as wind power, there's been often, how can we make this better? There's been, for all of the advancements with wind energy and with solar, the complaint is it's so very, very expensive. How can we make it different? Well, with wind, we have all kinds of costs. I mean, if you've ever seen any of these huge, huge windmills, you know that they're very, very expensive to put up, and it takes a while for these massive turbines to, you know, bring the return back. It's not something that happens within a month. Well, not only do you have that, but sometimes the wind doesn't blow. So the natural variability of wind presents a tremendous challenge, no matter where you are. Well, someone decided they were going to go study nature. Now, typically, you have your blades that will, dependent on the type of wind that's hitting it, they might lose their lift and actually stop rotating. Now, they say this is akin to holding your hand out the window of a moving automobile. If you tilt your palm up and you create lift, which pulls, that automatically will lift your hand. Same thing that happens with planes. Now, if you tilt too aggressively, then your hand is going to drop. Like a wind shear, stalling. Okay? Now, there's a company that believes it's found an answer. Yes, they think they found an answer to these problems. Again, they went out into nature and they were studying. What did they look at? This one was amazing to me. The fin of a whale. That's right, fin of a whale. Now, they chose a particular whale, the humpback. Why? Because they are able, with their fins, to gain a momentum and lift themselves up out of the water. And they turn and twist, and they say they found out why they're able to do it so easily. I mean, when you look at whales, I've seen them, and they're spectacular to watch. Well, they said the trick at this is in the turbocliff, or what they call the bumps along the flippers. Now, Frank Fish, appropriately named, he's the president of the company Whale Power. He said in their research they found that these bumps allow the fins to tilt further without stalling the momentum of the whale, because it changes the way the water flows over their fins. Now, Fish, Dr. Fish, is a professor also of biomechanics at Westchester University in Pennsylvania. And he says that a humpback turning without turbocliffs would resemble a car slipping on an icy turn instead of being able to make a tight turn if the flipper stalled, the whale would go out of the turn. Well, they have done wind tunnel tests with this at Duke University, and they have found that when they added these bumps like the humpback whale has on its fins, it pushed back the stall angle by as much as 40%. Now, there's been a lot of other people, when they found out what he had accomplished, said, let's test it, let's see if it works. And they tried it on airfoils, and they find that when the airfoils have these bumps, they stall more gradually, but they're not sure exactly why the process works. Isn't that wonderful? They don't know all the answers yet. They'll never know all the answers. It's just the way life is. However, the people in business have said this is significant, and the Canadian industrial fan maker EnviroNorth System expects to begin producing the first bump-inspired product, and they're making them in the form of a wavy blade for ceiling fans up to 24 feet in diameter. That's just incredible. Then they want to improve the technology of the wind turbine scale with blades that can have diameters of up to 400 feet. Mind-boggling, isn't it? It's amazing. Now, this is what's been happening since last August. The Wind Energy Institute of Canada on Prince Edward Island has been testing a turbine with blades retrofitted by Whale Power, which is precisely, they say, what the company needs to demonstrate its technology and that it works. And they are really going for this. Bumps. Who would have ever thought of bumps? But you know, they checked out sharks. There's a lot of people doing research like for the Olympic swimmers and the clothes that they wear, you know, whatever they're going to do for speed, skaters, speed. How can you make it so that you don't have any drag on your skating? And it was always fascinating to me when you'd hear these different reports about skaters, and they'd say if the hair was not covered, if you didn't have the smooth surface, then that could cause a drag. And let's face it, I mean, so many of these people are so talented, it's like 100,000th of a second and someone beat you? Jeez, I mean, it's amazing. So all of these things are consideration, and they're caused by people observing nature. Sharks moving through water with ease, without any drag on them, being able to twist and turn and move so smoothly. All of these different things, it's marvelous that people are really out there observing. So just a little bit of information. We may have, eventually, some form of equipment that the average everyday person can use that will catch the very slightest draft, and it's going to sort of, I don't know that it eliminate utility companies, but I think it's going to eliminate high costs, and there's going to be so many different variables on this. There's not just one answer, and that's exciting. It's keeping an open mind. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. All I need is your first name or your initial, and then we'll take it from there. Give me a call if you'd like some intuitive insight, 877-876-5227 or 888 815-975-9756. Now, tomorrow we're going to have as a guest Louise Lewis. No experts needed. Isn't that music to your ears? Well, Louise has a lot of good things to share. And next week we have got such a lineup of guests. We have got Captain Eric Navarro, and he is going to be talking about his wild ride with the new Iraqi army. This man's story is fascinating. Also, we're going to be talking about 27 winning strategies for success for those people going off to college. And also, we're going to be talking about some material about Winston Churchill and how many of the statements he made and his life can be an inspiration for success for the college student. And then we're going to get into flying saucers. Flying saucers, UFOs, and science. Stanton Friedman's going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about Tinkerbell next week. Yes, she was a real person. I'm not kidding you. Tinkerbell was real. Her name? Well, you're going to have to listen. She was a circus queen as well as being Tinkerbell. Walt Disney discovered her, and you're going to find out all about her next week. And then the truth about beauty. Kat James is a woman that I just think is absolutely phenomenal when it comes about good looks and how you can achieve them. We're going to be talking a little bit about nutrition, attitude, all kinds of stuff. So we have got a wonderful, wonderful lineup of guests. Be sure to tell your friends. And if you happen to miss any of these shows, don't forget, here at BBS, we have the archives. And you can always go in and just tune in to anything that you like when it's convenient. If you're working on your accounting, your taxes, whatever, just know you can go in and you can be entertained easily and readily just by tuning into the Donna Sebo Show. We've got all kinds of wonderful guests. Well, I am going to just think about here for a moment about what I am going to share with you. I know we're going to be taking a break pretty soon. So let me just quickly give you some information about this wonderful dog. No, I think maybe I'm just going to wait a little bit on this. I'm getting so many wonderful stories for those of you out there. And if you have a special story, a special recipe, something you'd like for me to know about that you think people would enjoy understanding, hearing about, etc., send it to me via email at Donna@Delphi. Send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's DelphiInternational.com. I can't promise when I would use it. My goodness, I've been getting so much wonderful information. And I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you. And as I'm able to do so, I will be sharing it with you. So we're taking a break in just a moment. Don't forget, you can give me a call if you'd like. I'd be happy to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.DelphiInternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and her website is www.DelphiInternational.com.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95, plus shipping and handling. and the author, Donna Siebel, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Siebel's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Siebel. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. Now, I've had some inquiries about where I'm going to be doing some appearances. This month, I was going to be involved with the Ren Fair, but that had to be canceled at the last minute. So I'm not going to be on the road traveling until next month. I'll be going to California next month and also to Alaska. So there is quite an itinerary that I have laid out for next month, and you'll be hearing all about it as we get closer to it. So then it'll also be included in my newsletter. By the way, the newsletter for this month is up on my website, and so you're welcome to go in and read it anytime that you like. When we hear about famous people, when we see them on television, people like Bobby Flay, if you're a person that enjoys cooking shows, oh, I love cooking shows. And there's just so much out there that's such a delight to watch. I know there are some people say, don't you get bored with this? And I say, no, it just really interests me, the different things that people do and how they can use various ingredients and how they come up with different recipes. Well, I know I'm not the only person on this planet that just has a love affair with food, but I do think the stories of the people that are in the positioning of the public eye and are recognized for their very special talents, well, their stories are very special, and Bobby Flay is one of them. And I've got a picture of Bobby in front of me when he was a young man and when he graduated from the French Culinary Institute in 1984. But there's a story about Bobby that goes back to before that wonderful accomplishment. And he grew up in New York, and he was volunteering at a public vocational high school in Queens. And he discovered to his amazement when he got involved in a cooking class how much fun that he was having just doing it. And it brought back a lot of memories about what he was like when he was really young. And he was a rebel. He was a tremendous rebel. He didn't like school. All he wanted to do was just hang out with his buddies. And he said, I don't want to be bothered with too much of anything. Sound familiar from teenage attitude? Well, his dad one day called him into his office after watching his son lounge around and not being very responsible. He said, come on in, we're going to talk about your life. Now, Bobby's 17 years old when this event occurs, and of course his response is, my life, good grief, I'm only 17 years old. Why do we even have to think about this? And he said, my dad was just a wonderful guy, but it was really scary to him when his dad called him into his office. Now, his dad had an office at a very famous restaurant in the theater district in New York. And he sat Bobby down and he said, you're going to go out and you're going to get a job. You cannot just hang out with your friends on a corner. You're not going to just lounge around all day. You've got to go to work. So he said, okay. And then Bobby's thought was, what am I going to do? Where am I going to find a job? Well, his dad called him on the carpet again regarding this another time. And he said, you know what, Dad, I haven't been able to find anything. Well, I think Dad pretty much had that figured out. So Bobby's dad did something. He said, well, there's a busboy that has lost his job at the restaurant. You're going to go fill in for him. It wasn't would you, it's you are going to go and fill in the job. You're not going to get any special treatment. You are my son. But you're going to have to work a heck of a lot harder than anybody else. You do your job. You don't aggravate anybody, including me. I wonder how you would feel after someone had made a statement to you like that when you're 17 years of age and you figure that you're going to slide through life. I think it would get you thinking a little bit. Well, he did. He cleared tables. He did all of the grunt work in the restaurant. Then the chef one day at the restaurant asked him, do you want a job? And he said, sure. So he goes into the kitchen, and the guy has him to start working in the pantry of the kitchen. And he said that meant stocking it, washing dishes, learning how to clean lettuce, how to use a knife, make salad dressing. He said, I just did it. I didn't think I had any special skill. But he said, you know what? I was pretty good at it. Well, after he worked for 6 months at the restaurant with his father, he awakened one morning saying to himself, you know what? I really like going into work. Well, that was a shocker. That was totally 180 degrees different from what he had been experiencing 6 months earlier, where he didn't want to work at all. Well, he said, little by little, I was shedding this skin of irresponsibility. And the owner of the restaurant, Joe Allen himself, walked in one day, and he signaled to the chef and Mr. Allen, and the chef take Bobby along. And, of course, the first thing that Bobby's thinking is, oh, my goodness, what did I do wrong? Am I going to get fired? But that's not what happened. Joe Allen looked at Bobby because he recognized that Bobby had a natural knack for cooking. And he said, there's a brand new school that's opening up. It's called the French Culinary Institute. Do you want to go? What was his response? Do you think he was jumping up and down with joy? Mm-mm. He said no. He didn't like school. The truth was, Bobby said, he really didn't believe he was good enough to go to cooking school. He said he had the idea in his head. You either had it or you didn't. And he didn't feel like what he was doing was coming naturally to him. He said cleaning produce is one thing, but good grief. At 18 years of age, I may not have what it takes to be a chef. Well, they recognized his talent. So he let them talk him into it. And so before he could get in, he had to pass his GED, and that was something when he got that finished, it made him feel pretty good, because after all, he was a high school dropout. Actually, he found he was looking forward to going back to school. Now, this school had just opened its doors. There were only 9 students, and he was the youngest, and he said there was an Alsatian chef named Antoine, and he was a phenomenal cook. And he had the best personality. He said working with him was just amazing. Now, while he was attending the Culinary Institute, Bobby Flay also was working. So he was involved in food 24/7, both at work as well as in school. And it was a 6-month curriculum. He learned a lot. And then Joe Allen, after he graduated, threw him out of the restaurant. He said, you can't stay here. And he said, well, why not? I want to be the chef here. He said, this is my new career. Was that a surprise when that came out of his mouth? Well, everybody at the restaurant said, no, you got to get out of here. So he managed to get hired by a different grill, the Brighton Grill. And by golly, he was able to go to work for them. He arrived on time, which was a first for him. And to his amazement, found that their first-class chef that they had hired was not there. Well, that was the beginning. And as you know, he has just evolved. And after so many years, he is recognized around the world as being one of the most famous chefs on the planet. And he has some wonderful, wonderful recipes. And I know we're going to be out of time quickly, but I'll share them perhaps with you tomorrow. But this is a man that now is very much involved in helping other young people learn what he learned and helping people become enthusiastic about cooking. He brings the joy of what he discovered, seemingly by accident, that when you are doing what you love to do, you're never going to be in the wrong place. This is Donna Siebel. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is a fabulous day. I know you're going to be able to invest in yourself and invest in your passion. Do it with joy. This is what life really is all about. Donna Siebel here. We'll be here same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.